First Peter, and we're in chapter 2, and a really significant passage from chapter 2, verses 9 to 12 is where we're going to read. So 1 Peter chapter 2 and verses 9 to 12. So Peter is writing to these churches. He's possibly never met the Christians in them, living in what we'd call modern-day Turkey. And this is what he says to them. He says, you, 1 Peter 2:9, you are a chosen people, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a people belonging to God, that you may declare the praises of him who called you out of darkness into his wonderful light. Once you were not a people, but now you are the people of God. Once you had not received mercy, but now you have received mercy. Dear friends, I urge you as aliens and strangers in the world to abstain from sinful desires which war against your soul. Live such good lives among the pagans that though they accuse you of doing wrong, they may see your good deeds and glorify God on the day he visits us. So verses 9 and 10 again. You are a chosen people, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a people belonging to God, that you may declare the praises of him who called you out of darkness into his wonderful light. Once you were not a people, but now you are the people of God. Once you had not received mercy, but now you have received mercy. So he's saying to the Christians there that they're a nation, they're a people, a royal people, a chosen people, a holy people, a people belonging to God. Of which people are you? What's your nationality? What nation do you belong to? What do you identify with? Or which country do you identify with? I think probably most of us, if not all of us, looking around today, would identify with Scotland. Are we Scottish first, or are we British first? Or are we European first? Does it really matter too much? Where do you belong? Belonging is very important. It's very important to have a sense of roots, to have a sense of identity, to have a sense of who are your people and who you should feel most at home among. And that's why when we look out in the world and see in various places people being displaced from their home countries as refugees, and having to cross borders out of their own countries into other countries to find safety, and living in camps really with no identity. They don't belong to the country that they're in as refugees, and the country that they belong to they can't go to because it's dangerous for one reason or another. That's a tragic situation for people to be in, to be without an identity. A few years back I watched the film The Terminal. And in The Terminal, the actor Tom Hanks plays Victor Navorsky. Victor Navorsky is travelling from an Eastern European country, a fictional one of course, by the name of Krakosia. And he's travelling into the United States. But while he's on his flight from Krakosia into the United States, Krakosia is taken over by another country. And it ceases to exist as a country. And the new regime in Krakosia is not recognised by the United States. So when he arrives in John F. Kennedy Airport with his Krakosian passport and papers, they aren't recognised by the immigration authorities. And so he can't get into the United States. But because Krakosia no longer exists, he can't be sent back to his home country either. So he becomes a person really with no home, and he ends up spending months living in the International Arrivals Lounge of John F. Kennedy Airport. And of course, Tom Hanks acts out this fellow who initially arrives with virtually no English whatsoever. And it's absolutely hilarious in places, but very moving. Because initially the reaction of people to this man who's a non-entity, who hasn't got a homeland, it's disappeared from the map, and who can't come into the United States, the reaction is hostile. He's a man without a home. Who is he? He doesn't belong anywhere. Who are you? Where do you belong? Peter here, in very powerful language, describes those who've come to Jesus. As it says in verse 4, as you come to him, as you come to Jesus, the living stone. He says that they're a chosen people, a royal priesthood, and so on. Now when you read that language, where does it come from? Is it Peter who's made up all these terms? Or is the language familiar from somewhere else? Actually, pretty much everything Peter says in verses 9 and 10 is drawn from the Old Testament descriptions of Israel. If you read in Exodus chapter 19, verse 5 and 6, God says to Israel, just fresh out of Egypt, and about to hear the law from Mount Sinai, he says to them, if you obey me fully and keep my covenant, then out of all nations you will be my treasured possession. The people belonging to God. You, although the whole earth is mine, you will be for me a kingdom of priests, a royal priesthood, and a holy nation. And then, a few hundred years later, when Israel is in exile in Babylon, God says to them, promising to bring them back from exile, this is Isaiah 43, verse 20, I provide water in the desert and streams in the wasteland to give drink to my people, my chosen people, the people I formed for myself, that they may proclaim my praise, that they may declare the praises, as verse 9 says, of him who called them out of darkness. And again, we read in Hosea chapters 1 and 2, when God is saying to Israel, whom he's disowning, because they have been totally unfaithful to him, they've disowned God, and they've worshipped false gods and idols. He says, I will plant Israel for myself in the land again. I will show my love to the one I called not my loved one. I will say to those called not my people, you are my people. These are the words of verse 10 of 1 Peter 2. Peter is describing the Christians he's writing to as though they were Israel. Are they Jews? Are they Jewish people? Well, some of them might be in the churches, but remember we already showed that most of them are probably just Gentiles. They're non-Jews. Peter describes them. If you look through this letter, he describes them as people who had lived in the past in ignorance, with an empty way of life, doing what pagans do. Now, you wouldn't describe Jews in that way. Peter is writing to people who are Gentiles, but he's describing them as though they were Jews. He's writing to people who have no ethnic connection to the Jewish nation, the Jewish people, to Israel. But he's using the language that God uses to describe Israel of the Gentiles he's writing to. What he's saying here is something absolutely amazing. He's saying that the Christians that he's writing to share the privileges of the Jews. When the Jews were at their best, when they were at their closest to God, when they were in their most special relationship with God, the Gentiles are like that now, the Gentile Christians. And Peter shows that in all kinds of ways throughout his letter. For example, Peter, more than pretty much any writer, uses the Old Testament scriptures all the time in this letter. He's quoting all the time and he's saying to these Gentiles, the Jewish scriptures are for you. He also speaks in this letter about some of the Jewish heroes, people like Noah or Sarah and the prophets and the martyrs and so on, even the angels at times. And he's saying to the Gentiles, these people who are the Jewish heroes are also your heroes. Their history is your history. But the most important thing he's saying in this letter is that Jesus, the Messiah of Israel, the promised one of Israel, is your Messiah, Gentiles. He's the Messiah of Israel, but he's also your Messiah. Now for us, we've been brought up as Gentiles in a Christian tradition, we might not think that's all that remarkable. But remember, the people Peter's writing to, when they grew up, they didn't know about Jesus. They'd never heard about Jesus. And the Jews were living in a far, far off land, an exotic place far away with a foreign god, and they had their own gods in Pontus and Galatia and Cappadocia and all the places Peter's writing to. But now, these people, these Gentiles, have embraced Israel's God. And they've recognized him as the true and the living God. This foreign God of a foreign nation is their God. The scriptures of this foreign nation are their scriptures. The history of this foreign nation is their history. The Messiah of this foreign nation is their Messiah. That's what Peter's saying here. And it's the same for us in Kyle. I mean, our ancestors in the Highlands did not worship Jesus, did not worship the living God. Our ancestors, not that far back, were worshipping idols, were worshipping false gods as well. But the time came when they heard the gospel and they received Jesus. And what Peter's saying here is they became part of the chosen people, the royal priesthood, the holy nation, the people belonging to God. They became as though they had been born Jews. And every one of you today who has received the Lord Jesus Christ in your life belong to that same privilege and position as well. So Christians, Peter writing to them at the very beginning of the letter, may be scattered throughout the world, as he says, verse 1 of chapter 1. And in chapter 5, verse 9, he speaks about Christians throughout the world. They're scattered. It's not like they're all born in the same country. It's not like they all have the same ethnicity, the same root, people and language, nationhood. They don't have a homeland in the spiritual sense. They're from all over the place. But God has made us, whether we're Christians living in Scotland, Christians living in Iran, Christians living in North Korea, God has made us a holy nation, a chosen people, a people belonging to God. So we're not like Victor in the arrivals lounge in John F. Kennedy Airport, a non-entity, someone who doesn't belong anywhere. We all belong, ultimately, to Israel. And all that Old Testament history that we read, which sometimes is quite hard going, some of it. It's quite, it seems very far away and a culture very different to us. It's our history. All this scripture here, it's for us. The stories are for us. The people we read about, they're our people. And the Messiah we read about is our Messiah. We are part of that great history, part of that great nationhood, part of that privileged people who are called by God from nothing, called by God in Abraham out of idolatry and out of obscurity to be a people belonging to him, a holy nation, a royal priesthood, who were once not a people, but now are the people of God, who once had not received mercy, but now have received mercy. So we all have, as Christians, wherever we're from in the world, we all have a common nationhood, a common identity through the Messiah, Jesus Christ, a common calling to be a common people. But that makes us have a different relationship with the world that we live in. And so in verse 1 of chapter 1, Peter describes these Christians as strangers in the world. And here at verse 11 of chapter 2, he says that they are aliens and strangers in the world. A people whose true citizenship is not of the land in which they dwell, but is of the heavenly Israel, the people who belong to God. We have a common ethnic identity, but it's not from the country we live in. So if I travel throughout the world and I meet Christians in other parts of the world, we may have absolutely nothing in common on the basis of language, on the basis of our experience growing up, on the basis of the part of the world that we live in and that we're from and who our people are and so on. But yet we belong to a common nation. We belong to a common people. We belong to this people whom God has constituted, whom God has brought together in his Son Jesus Christ. We have a common ethnic identity in that sense. As Paul puts it in Philippians 3 and verse 20, he says, our citizenship is in heaven. That's where our citizenship's from. And that's really significant. Paul's language there is great because in the Roman world that all this takes place in, only some people were Roman citizens. Most people weren't Roman citizens. And because they weren't Roman citizens, they lacked privileges. But we're all citizens in Jesus Christ, as Paul, of heaven. And as Peter says here, we all belong to a holy nation. We're a people belonging to God. We may be scattered. We may be aliens and strangers. We may be stuck in an international rivals lounge. We may be exiled far from home. But we're a people. We're one people having the privileges of Israel. Now Israel, as a nation, were given their own distinctive customs and their own distinctive laws. What about the new Israel? What about the church? What makes us distinctive? Let me tell you two things. The first thing that makes us distinctive is in verse 11. As aliens and strangers in the world, abstain from sinful desires which war against your soul. That makes you distinctive. You distance yourself from, you abstain from sinful lusts. Now let me be quite clear about this. If you do that in our society today, you will stand out. You will look like you're from a different place. And that is what a Christian is, from a different place. Our citizenship is in heaven. If you stand apart from and keep your distance from lust, you'll look different. Because most people are in their lives living by their own desires. They don't have discipline in their lives. Now in Peter's day, standing apart from sinful lust meant you didn't go to the theatre. You didn't go to the Roman gladiatorial contests. You didn't go to the races. You didn't go to the pagan religious ceremonies. And that meant you were excluded from a great deal of the civic life of the societies in which the Christians lived. You had to work out what it meant to live as someone who knew that Jesus Christ is Lord, while most people around were acknowledging a whole plethora of other gods and were also worshipping Caesar as a god. And you stood apart from that. You said, I'm not going to live the way people live. And people lived in a very kind of base way. They lived for the contests, the bloody contests, and the bacchanalian festivals and so on. They lived for indulgence. You stood apart from that as a Christian. You were marked as a person. So, just like the Jews, who in that society in the first century were far from home in Israel, their home in Israel, they were far from home, and there were Jews in all around the Roman Empire, they set themselves apart by their customs and their distinctives. So Christians too must do the same. That's what Peter's saying here. And that meant, for the Jews, that meant they came to be regarded as misfits. And it's the same for Christians. A Christian who abstains from sinful desires will not look like everyone else in society and will be regarded as not fitting in. And what follows on from that is persecution. Now, it may be that in our own nation we're moving more into that kind of situation again. Christians have to abstain from sinful desires, because you belong to a nation that you want to represent properly. And that nation is the nation of the heavenly Israel. The new Israel is the church that will last forever. When Scotland is swept away and all other nations are swept away. And you want to represent your nation just as if you're a Scot travelling. You want to show a good side of Scotland to everyone you meet. So, you want to show a good side, the good side of heaven. You want to show the greatness of heaven, the greatness of belonging to the holy people of God in this world. And you'll be different. But you're not to be odd. You've got to be different in an attractive way. Sadly, many times Christians are different in an odd way. They're just oddballs. The Authorized Version, you remember how it translates a people belonging to God in verse 9. It says a peculiar people. And that's using the word peculiar in an old sense that we don't really use it in much today. But often Christians are peculiar in the modern sense. And you become peculiar if you're just identified as someone who doesn't do this and doesn't do that and doesn't do the next thing. And sadly, that's what Christians have often been characterized as. People who don't do things. Now, of course, that's got to be true. And you may hear someone say to you, do you mean you don't look at porn? You mean you don't have sex before marriage? You don't get drunk? You don't pilfer from your employer? And that seems strange. And in verse 12, the pagans accused the Christians of doing wrong. And that's probably the kind of thing Peter means. They accused the Christians of doing wrong by not taking part in all the wrong things that the pagans were doing. But we're not to be negative. We're not just people who abstain from. That's very important, because if you don't, it will war against your soul, as Peter says, and you'll die spiritually. Peter continues with a second distinctive in verse 12. You live a good life. The word good there can be translated beautiful, fit, sound. You've got to strive to show that belonging to the new Israel is a positive and a wonderful thing. You, if you're a Christian, a follower of Jesus, have a heavenly citizenship. You're a royal priesthood. You're a holy nation. You're a chosen people. You're a people belonging to God. So you want to show that that's a positive thing. So all around you, if there are people without hope, are they without hope? Are they anxious? Are they fearful? Are they stressed? Are they bitter? Are they complaining? Are they cynical, the people around you? Well, if they are, then you show them something else. Live such a good life. Out of the grace of Jesus. Out of the forgiveness. Out of the love. Out of the peace that Christ gives into your life. that the pagans or the people around you who don't know Jesus will look at you and say, that's good, that's something positive. I see something in you that I want. They will see the grace of God in your life. And then, as verse 12 says, they will glorify God on. And the NIV unfortunately puts in the word the there. It doesn't. It's not in the original text. Just on a day. On any day when God comes to favour and bless, they'll say, yes, we want what these Christians have. We want to belong to this holy nation, to this royal priesthood, to this people belonging to God. The church grows by attraction, not by negatives. And that's a challenge to you, and it's a challenge to me. Viktor Navorsky, in the end of the film, manages to win over many friends in the terminal in JFK Airport. Christians, we have to live in such a way that we attract people. We attract people to consider Jesus, to consider the Lord, and to want to belong to his people. So the challenge today from Peter is, from God is, to me and to you, to go out from here, to abstain, to keep your distance from indulgence, which will war against your soul, but to live such a good life in grace and in love and mercy and kindness, forgiveness, that you will make the people around you want to live in your country.